This is Harv Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast, and when I start my workday, it always begins with that morning shower. Normally, I use a liquid body wash, but recently I purchased a bar of Sterling Soap Company's handcrafted bath soap and decided to give their Deep Blue Sea handcrafted bath soap a try. Immediately, the aroma of Sterling's bath soap was obvious, and in using this soap, I felt refreshed, clean, energized, and Sterling's bath soap helped me step out of that shower with the momentum and eagerness to get my day rolling. If you want to get a refreshing wake-up call in the morning and get your busy day off to the right start, I highly recommend going to Sterling Soap Company's website and order one of their many varieties of bath soaps among other products they offer. Visit Sterling Soap Company at sterlingsoap.com. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Welcome to the Pro Football Time Machine. This is your host, Tom Pollen, along with Zozo the Cat. Before we start our journey, please take a moment to click on the subscribe button so you're ready to join Zozo and I each time we make a trip into the past. Now, join us as we slip from the present day through the time portal and begin our journey. We all know who the first round draft busts are in NFL history. We get top 10 lists, most that mention the same players every year, 2 to 3 weeks before the NFL draft. A better question to ask at this time of year is, what is the direct opposite of a first round bust? First round gold? As in gold jacket? Fortunately, there's an easy answer to that question. In 1953, the New York Giants struck out in their first, second, and third round picks, but in the 27th round, with the 322nd pick overall, they struck a vein of pure gold. New York selected a future Pro Football Hall of Fame tackle out of Morgan State, Roosevelt Rosie Brown. By the time Brown retired after the 1965 season, after 13 years of battles on the line of scrimmage, he had been an 8-time All-Pro, a 9-time Pro Bowler, and was the anchor on offense for New York's 1956 championship team. In 1975, Rosie received the ultimate honor for a player when he was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Rosie Brown grew up in Charlottesville, Virginia. He described his childhood in a November 8, 1964 article in the New York Times. "I was always a big boy. When I was 6, my mother put me in school and I took a test. I must have passed it because they put me in third grade. No first grade and no second grade. That meant I graduated from high school when I was 15 and from college at 19. When I played my first game for the Giants in 1953, I was still 19. However, Brown's path to the NFL almost never happened. Brown was forbidden from playing football by his father after his older brother Frank died from an injury he sustained on the football field. Brown's father wanted to see Rosie work on being a musician, then using his physical talents to excel on the football field." That's right, Zoe. An over 6 foot tall trombone player. Brown was playing trombone in the Jefferson High School band when the school's football coach, Robert W. Smith, noticed him. Fortunately, Smith was able to talk Brown into playing, but for the first season, it was without his father's knowledge. Brown played without injury his sophomore season while towering over the opposition. He spent his junior and senior seasons being a dominant force on the offensive line. Based on his accomplishments in high school, both in the classroom and on the field, Brown should have had his pick of national college programs to play for. However, because of Jim Crow laws and the racial attitudes at the time, Brown ended up going to Morgan State in Baltimore, a historically black university on a full football scholarship. Brown earned all-conference honors at offensive tackle in 1951 and 1952, but was completely off the radar of mainstream newspapers. However, he did catch the attention of the Pittsburgh Courier, one of the most successful African-American newspapers in the country. The Courier had been naming black All-America teams since 1925, and Brown was named to the team at tackle after his 1952 season. That was the extent of his postseason honors, but it was enough. Brown's lack of national profile turned out to be a stroke of luck for New York. From the first NFL draft in 1936 to 1963, when NFL teams began forming scouting partnerships, teams didn't throw the resources into player evaluation that they do today, despite picking through 30 rounds. In 1953, the height of college scouting consisted of a team's brain trust closed up in a room with newspapers collected from all over the country, piled on tables around them. As the draft dragged into the 27th round, the New York draft team was tired and running out of ideas. Yes, so I'm sure even you would have been tired by then. Then someone picked up a copy of the Pittsburgh Courier. According to Wellington Mara, then the team's vice president, we took him. It didn't seem to make much difference who we took then. When Brown arrived at training camp, he was 6 feet 3 inches tall and 255 pounds. Impressive physically, but raw. What Brown did bring to his first camp was the physical tools to be a special player. Ed Coleman, the Giants' offensive line coach, had to teach Brown everything about technique during his first training camp, including the correct stance for an offensive lineman in the NFL. Once schooled on playing with proper technique, Brown was able to bring his physical gifts to the fore. He used his excellent balance and reflexes to become an unbeatable pass blocker, as well as a devastating run blocker. He was also fast enough to pull from the tackle position and lead a ball carrier downfield. No matter what he was called on to do, success came from Brown's commitment to being the anonymous key to the Giants' success on offense. He once said, "The backs who carry the ball, they get the credit, the headlines, the big money, but they know and we know that they wouldn't be anything if it wasn't for us who gave them the blocks." Brown was a key part of an extended string of success that New York enjoyed in the late 1950s to early 1960s. In his rookie season, the Giants finished with a 3-9 record, but they were putting together a powerhouse with a roster of players like quarterback Charlie Connerly, Kyle Rote, Frank Gifford on offense, and a defense that included Emlyn Tunnell and Tom Landry. That core would earn New York an NFL championship in 1956, their first since 1938, with a 47-7 blowout victory over the Western Division champion Chicago Bears. Unfortunately, the Giants weren't able to ride their big left tackle to another championship during his career. They were Eastern Division champions in 5 of the next 7 seasons, but fell to the Western Division champs each time. In 1958 and 1959, New York lost to the Johnny Unitas-led Baltimore Colts. The team's 1958 battle is still considered by many to be the greatest game ever played. In 1961 and 1962, Vince Lombardi's Green Bay Packers began their dynastic run through the 1960s with a pair of NFL championship game wins over the Giants. In 1963, New York led the NFL in scoring with a 34 points per game average. That team traveled to Wrigley Field to take on a Chicago Bears defense that had only allowed 10.3 points per game. Brown earned Lineman of the Game honors for his work against Chicago's fearsome front, but the Giants as a team fell short 13-10. When Rosie Brown retired after the 1965 season, He had played in 161 of the 166 games the Giants played over the course of his 13-year career. His overall impact was summed up by his peers. Lombardi said of Brown, "When you think of great tackles in professional football, you must think of Rosie Brown." Teammate Frank Gifford also publicly recognized Brown's importance to the Giants. "I wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame if it weren't for him," Gifford said. "The longest run of my career was on a pitch out against Washington. Rosie made a block at the line of scrimmage. I cut it up. And then I'm running downfield and I look up and I see number 79 in front of me and he wiped out another guy." Upon his retirement, Brown worked for the Giants as an offensive line coach and later scouted college offensive linemen for the team. While he continued his life giving back to the game he loved, football returned that love. Brown was named to the NFL's 1950s All-Decade Team. In 1964, he was named to the NFL's 75th Anniversary All-Time Team. Of course, in 1975, Brown joined George Connor, Dante Lavelli, and Lenny Moore for enshrinement in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. After Brown died on June 9, 2004, of a heart attack while working in his garden, he received two more prestigious honors from the game that he gave his life to. In 2010, Brown was a member of the inaugural class of the New York Giants Ring of Honor, and in 2019, was named to the NFL 100 All-Time Team. Roosevelt Rosie Brown received a lifetime of respect as a person and honors for his performance on the gridiron. Not bad for a 27th round trombone player. Zozo and I hope you enjoyed this trip into the past with us to celebrate the life of one of the greatest tackles in NFL history. Be sure to join us next time for a trip into the past in the Pro Football Time Machine.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you gotta do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sportshistorynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.